As I've expressed more than once, I appreciate more than you can know the opportunity to be here, to be with this church. I've heard good things about this group for years, and it's good to actually get to be here, to be with you. Though I must say, you know, coming here, I already had met many of you, but it's good to meet others. It's good to see this group working together, and I want to encourage you to be a strong and shining light in this community. Continue in that. I appreciate so much the good hospitality, the good meals I've been enjoying, and just I've enjoyed that. But the most important thing has been the fact that when I've stood up here each night, if you're not listening, you are doing a good job of fooling me. The attention seems to be paid. There seems to be thought given to it, and I appreciate that more than you can know. And I want to encourage you tonight to take a Bible. I want you to think along with me as we talk about some things that I believe important. I want to begin by asking you a question. What do the following have in common? Adam and Eve, Joseph, Tamar, Aaron, the woman of Proverbs 7, and John the Baptist. Now, if I gave you enough time, you might come up with some other things. But the thing that I have in mind is that at least at some point in their life, every one of these, their clothing said something about them. I mean, you think about when Adam and Eve are wearing fig leaves, that says, we sinned. We realize our nakedness. We are ashamed. Joseph, he had that special coat, that tunic that said, I'm the favorite child, and of course set up some of the problems. Tamar, the way she covered herself in Genesis 38, that special way she was attired made Judah think that she was a harlot. And then, of course, Aaron, as the high priest, had the special clothing with the special hat and the gold plate across it. And I don't know exactly what it was, but Proverbs 7 talks about she was in the attire of a harlot. There was clothing that marked one as an immoral person. And even John the Baptist, when it spoke of him dressed in camel's hair and a leather belt, I believe there was intended a connection to Elijah the prophet, as John the Baptist was said to come in the spirit and power of Elijah. What I'm saying in all of this is that dress has always had the power to convey a message, to say something about someone. In 1 Timothy, the second chapter, verses 9 and 10, Paul speaks of dress that is proper for women professing godliness. If he would say dress in a way that is proper, it obviously means there is such a thing as improper dress. I want us to think tonight about the question of what does our dress say about us? And I want us to realize from the very beginning, it would be foolish to think that our dress doesn't say anything about us. People recognize all the time that dress says something. You know, the world, they oftentimes in the business world, they expect a professional appearance. You know, now what a professional appearance means is going to vary from profession to profession, from location to location. You know, what a banker's expected to wear in New York might not be the same thing that a banker's expected to wear in Los Angeles. But wherever you are, they understand that they want this financial advisor, this banker, this whoever it may be, an insurance salesman, they want him to convey a certain image. And dress does that. I don't know if y'all have ever noticed this, but sometimes you can tell who somebody roots for by the way they dress. I've been careful to avoid that this week. But, you know, you in North Alabama, we're a little more divided than you are. And I know there's some division among you, and that ought not to be so. You know, but, you know, there's a little here. North Alabama on a Saturday, you go to Walmart, and it seems like 9 out of 10 people you see, you know who they're rooting for that day. By their dress. By the way, the clothes they're wearing. We understand that. But something else the world believes is they believe that there is attire that is sexy, that's seductive, that's sensual. I mean, that's the way they advertise it. If you read, you know, the caption is, you know, if you go to a news site and you were to decide to read about what they were wearing at the Grammys, at the People's Choice Awards, read the way the clothes are described. You know, pick up a fashion magazine and look at the way attire is described. I mean, it just screams sometimes, I want you to look at me. I want you to see me as physically attractive. And let's understand something. The world is not necessarily saying sexually attractive means sexually available. But the world is saying, I mean, they're telling us these clothes are not designed to reflect godliness. Dress sends a message. And there are some concerns as God's holy people we ought to have. Some things, and that's what I want you to think with me about. And I want to just start off with the fact God expects us to be a separate people. We began this meeting Sunday morning with a lesson about living as sojourners and pilgrims. We noticed the contrast in Philippians, the third chapter, in Colossians 3, and in other passages, that there are those whose minds are set on things of the earth. There are those whose citizenship is in heaven, whose minds are set on Christ, on things above. Romans, the 12th chapter. Paul has gone through this book and he has presented the gospel of Jesus Christ and its grace, the God that saved the unrighteous, a world filled with wickedness. And then he says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. Don't miss that by the mercies of God. Because of all that God has done, is doing, and will do for you, he said, I beseech you, therefore, by the mercies of God, present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You focus on those two words, conformed, transformed. And I find myself just, without even thinking about it, as I say conformed, I start doing my hands like this. And that's really what the idea, it's being pressed into a mold. You press something into the mold, and then when you turn it out, it looks like that mold. The world is pressing on us all the time. And it's not just about dress. It's our attitudes toward everything. The world is trying to press us. It's trying to push us into that mold. And the thing is, it will happen without our consciously deciding to be like the world. If we do not consciously renew the mind so that we become transformed, we're going to be like the world. God says, don't be that way. Don't be like the world around you. Look at 1 Peter, the first chapter. This is a passage that is much like that. Verse 13, therefore, gird up the loins of your mind. I want to tell you, this lesson is about a mental process. Gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lust as in your ignorance, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct, because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. You notice again the mind not conforming. And then he gives us what a standard that is. He said, you be holy, for I am holy. That's a quote from the book of Leviticus. The book of Leviticus, just to be honest with you, it can be one of the more difficult books to read through. It gets somewhat tedious sometimes as we go through the laws of sacrifice and the long list of the food you couldn't eat and various regulations. But the book of Leviticus repeatedly will have this statement, be holy, for I am holy. And God was teaching Israel to be different. They would worship differently. They would dress differently. They would eat differently. You know, everything was different. They were a holy people. And I want us to recognize we're a different people. Now, it's not that we just come up with our own little quirky ways to say, I'm going to be different. You know, I want to separate myself from the world, so I'm going to, you know, choose to do some strange thing. No. You will be different if you will present your bodies to God a living sacrifice. If you will renew your mind in holiness. If you will commit yourself to that life of a citizenship in heaven. It'll come. It won't take some special effort. What takes special effort is to resist that desire to be conformed. One area that I want to make mention of has to do with worship. Think about Hebrews, the 12th chapter, verse 28. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire. Serve God with reverence. Our God is a consuming fire. It would be a terrible mistake for anybody to think that Hebrews 12:29 is the totality of how God is described. But I believe it's an equally tragic mistake to say 1 John 4:8 is the totality of what God is and who He is. God is love, 1 John 4:8 says. Hebrews 12:29, our God is a consuming fire. Which is it? And the answer is yes. It is. He is all of this. God is to be worshipped in reverence. Back up in my Bible, you have to turn back a page. You may not in yours. But Hebrews, the 10th chapter. We spoke, I think particularly Sunday evening, about the importance of our assembling together. And we focused on 24 and 25. But that is the conclusion of a paragraph. And I want you to see the whole paragraph. Therefore, brethren, having boldness to enter the holiest by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which He consecrated for us through the veil that is His flesh, and having a high priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for He who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. I believe we misuse the text. If we separate 24 and 25 from 19 through 23. That as we come together in our assemblies, we come before God's very throne. That whereas Israel of old, they were kept back. Only the priests and Levites could enter the holy place. And then there stood the veil. And only the high priest, and just once a year. And he says, now we can come before God's very throne. All of us. And we can come with confidence. But can we come with confidence if we don't also come with reverence and godly fear, as he says, over one page? When God was going to appear on Mount Sinai and speak to the people, you may remember he gave several orders about getting ready. You know, putting the boundary around the mountain. And one of the things he said was, you wash your clothes and be ready. Men, as I said last night, should not make laws that God has not made. And I mean that. I'm not about to try to make laws of what worship attire should look like. But I do believe that in our age of God being treated as the man upstairs, you know, that when a couple of baseball players died, you know, then they talk about, you know, God now filling out his lineup card and he's penciling in, you know, whoever it was, Don Drysdale and somebody else. And God has become so flippant and so common that maybe that's had an impact on our whole view of worship. Worship is intended to stir one another up. It's intended to encourage one another. But it is also an approach before the throne of the Almighty God. And I want us to just ask ourselves, does our dress say anything about that? Does it reflect? Just please give it thought. Don't let your dress reflect a diminished reverence for God. Don't let that happen. How about clothes that have messages? And I'm talking about, you know, clothes that have pictures on them, have words on them, you know, some kind of something distinctive that sends a message out. I mean, we know what we're talking about. Let me give you some passages to consider in this. Ephesians 5, verses 8 through 14 is a contrast of light and darkness. In verse 11, challenges have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Some say reprove them. You don't share. Fellowship is sharing in. You don't share in things of darkness. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, he puts it the other way. He says, let your light shine before men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. We are obligated to live lives that bring glory to God, that are a reflection of that light of Jesus Christ. One other passage I want you to think, and we're going to try to make some application to dress in a second. But in 2 Corinthians, the 8th chapter, this context may not be as well known as Matthew 5 to some of you, but Paul is dealing with the collection. 1 Corinthians 16, he had said, on the first day of the week, you take this collection, and the specific need was for the saints at Jerusalem. Well, some time has gone by, and the church at Corinth hasn't been doing their job, and he's trying to stir them up to get on the ball. But he gives some details of what's going to happen. And he's telling them that there are messengers that have been chosen by the churches to travel with him. And look at his reason for this. Verse 20, avoiding this, that anyone should blame us in this lavish gift which is administered by us, providing honorable things not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. I couldn't tell you how many times over the years I might be talking with a Christian about something. It could be dress. It could be anything. It might be places they go. And they'd make some statement like, well, I don't care what people think. I know what I'm doing. Paul said, when it comes to this money, he said, I want it to be honorable, not just before God. He said, I want it to look honorable in the sight of all men. He said, in other words, it ought not just to be right, it ought to look right. Be careful here. Now, when you get to this and you get to the specifics, sometimes there's some gray areas. You know, I don't like gray areas, but they're there. Let me give you, may not be a good illustration of what I mean by a gray area, but, and I don't know how many of you are NFL fans. I know we're in the South. We're college football fans. But strangely enough, my favorite NFL team, if I have a favorite, I'm not a big NFL fan, is the New England Patriots. When healthy, Rob Gronkowski is the best tight end in all of football. You can argue about that, but you'd be wrong, you know. The guy's amazing when he's healthy. He's strong, he's fast, he's big, he runs good routes, he can block, he can catch, he's great. He also has a reputation for hanging out in Las Vegas with strippers, being at parties all night in which he gets, you know, plastered out of his mind, doing all kinds of things. If you're a Patriots fan, would you wear a jersey with Gronk's name on it? You know, I wouldn't. But I can understand where the most avid New England fans, all they do is see that as a statement, I like the Patriots, and Gronk's my favorite receiver. On the other hand, did you know at least a few weeks ago the number one selling jersey was Michael Sam? If you don't know who Michael Sam is, you're fortunate. But he is the homosexual football player from Missouri that was drafted by the St. Louis Rams, and his jersey is a statement. He's a sixth-round draft choice, you know, and the number one selling jersey. Would you wear that? I don't care how avid a Rams fan you may be, and I've got nothing against the Rams. I like Jeff Fisher, their coach. But you don't wear that. You are endorsing that which is wrong. There are schools that are associated with what I believe to be false religion. Would you wear, in Alabama, the answer is always a resounding no. Would you wear a Notre Dame jersey? But is Notre Dame just a university that has a pretty good football history? Or is it an endorsement of the Catholic Church, which I believe to be apostate? Brigham Young, BYU. See, I cannot disassociate those schools from the false religion they're associated with. But am I saying everybody would? See, I would have to think about these things. But what about Duke? A lot of people don't even realize Duke has a religious connection. You know, I might treat that one differently. There are areas that are somewhat gray. I'm going to mention one now that some of you are going to disagree with me on, but I want you to hear me on this. My children were always forbidden. I don't care whether how many other kids in their class wore it. They could never wear anything with a Confederate battle flag on it. I heard all the arguments. It's heritage. It's not hate. But I know what that symbolizes to a large percentage of people in this country. And I said, if we're going to let our light shine, that was my decision. I'm not saying you have to agree with that decision. But what I am saying to you is you have to think through the process that led me to my conclusion on that. That your position is, I don't want to have any fellowship with darkness. But more than that, I want to be a light. I want to be a light that would cause people to glorify God. I want to do things that are honorable. And I want them to look honorable. So, on the gray area, I lean toward caution. But then again, there are clothes, there are pictures of entertainers. I've seen Christians wearing t-shirts sometimes that were endorsements of bars and restaurants, loosely called, that were nothing but known for their immorality or their indecent dress, or the various things. I've seen them wearing t-shirts that had beer endorsements on them, endorsements of gambling. Sometimes with my children, I would say, "What were you thinking?" And then before they could ever answer, you know what I'd always say? "No, wait, I know, you weren't thinking." And I want to say, brethren, if you're wearing one of the t-shirts from, I'm not even going to say the name of that place that says it's about the wings, what are you thinking? What are we doing when we're doing that? We need to be a people who let our light shine brightly. That we don't endorse anything that's evil. Don't do it. Don't do it. And then there's the area, and this is probably the one that most thought I was going to go to first. We'll talk about sensuality. Anybody heard of the sexual revolution? That was a movement, a war that was fought in America in the 1960s, on into the 70s. You know who lost? Or rather, what lost? When the sexual revolution took place, morality and decency and virtue lost. I'm proud to be an American. I can wave my flag if it's appropriate. I go to the 4th of July fireworks every year. But we're not a godly country. We are not a country that appreciates morality. Our fashion industry has nothing biblical about it. Do you think the folks that are designing clothes today appreciate Hebrews 13:4? Marriage is honorable among all and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. You think that's the approach they take to it? You know what they think about a passage like Matthew 5:27-28? You've heard it was said to those of old, "You shall not commit adultery. But I say to you, whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has committed adultery with her already in his heart." That's a laugh. That's something to make jokes about on late night television or primetime television. The idea of Matthew 18, that we should be concerned about whether we cause someone to sin. Jesus said, "Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. You think the folks that design clothes for Abercrombie and Fitch ever think about, you know, I want to make sure I don't lead some young girl down the wrong path with this. You know, I sure don't want to put a stumbling block before that young teenage boy. Are you kidding me? That's a thought never crosses their mind. That's not their world. To go back to what we said Sunday morning, Philippians 3, they are people who dwell on the earth. Their minds are not set on heavenly things. The idea that one should be like 1 Peter 3 describes of a gentle, quiet spirit, that one's conduct, verse 2, should be chaste and pure. You know, they want you to be a little devilish, a little daring. That's what our world wants. And here's where we go back to what we said at the very beginning. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I am convinced that a lot of good people, a lot of folks who in so many ways are seeking to please God, just don't stop and think. They don't stop to think about, am I being conformed to this world? Am I going along with things that the world knows is sensual? I want to urge you, take a careful look at your dress. And this is for men and women both. Is it too low? That's been the fashion trend in recent years. Do we really think that the low cut was designed to make folks say, now there goes a godly woman? How about being too tight? You may have everything covered, but the attire may be so tight is that it really draws more attention to things covered than if they were uncovered. It can be too tight. It can be too short. Somebody said one time, if you continually find yourself tugging at it, it's too short. You know, it can be too short. There may not be enough of it. And I think, guys, I just want to ask you a question. How much less than a modern bathing suit do you think Adam was wearing when he hid and the Lord said, why are you hiding? He said, well, because I'm naked. And I will tell you, you go back to Genesis 3, God didn't say, Adam, don't be silly. In 2014, you know, Christian men will run around wearing about the same thing you're wearing. They're not, no. He made him a tunic that would cover a whole lot more than what he did. Is it too sheer? Sometimes we just see right through it. Now, every now and then, my wife will get something out of the refrigerator. Something that maybe has been in there just a little while. And it's not reached that point where anything's growing on it. But she'll smell it. And then she'll bring it over to me and say, does this smell funny to you? I'm like, I don't even need to smell it. You know, if you thought it felt funny, we're not eating this. You know, my motto on leftovers is if when in doubt, throw it out. You know, we don't have to smell it four or five times and then maybe get brave enough to stick our finger in it and taste it. You know, I did that with the milk recently. I wasn't sure. Oh, wow. Why didn't I stick to my rule? Take a look. Look in your closet. Before you go out, look in the mirror. And if you, I'll tell you, if you have to turn to somebody, maybe you're living at home, you're married, you look to your husband or to your wife or to one of your roommates and you say, do you think this is too, it is. It really is. I don't care which one of those it is. If you think you might need to ask the question, the answer is probably yes. Don't do it. Well, somebody says, but preacher, doesn't God say in 1 Samuel 16 and verse 7 that God doesn't look at the outward appearance, that he only looks at the heart? Well, let's look at it. Verse 7, Samuel was there at Bethlehem to anoint one of the sons of Jesse. The Lord said to Samuel, who had, he'd already figured out who it was. It was Eliab. And he's the one. Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And sometimes people, I think some in all sincerity, some with a questionable sincerity, but assuming in all sincerity, will say, everything you've said up to this point is out the door because God only looks at the heart. Now, I want you to think about context. There is no doubt. And I think we need to learn this lesson. Sometimes we have trouble with it. God doesn't judge a man, woman, by their height, their weight, the color of their skin, the color of their eyes, the color of their hair, or the absence of hair. God doesn't look at that. But these words were spoken under a law that regulated an awful lot of outward appearance. If he was meaning this to be absolute, that God cares nothing at all about anything external, then you explain the book of Leviticus. You explain all the things about, you go to 2 Samuel 6 or 1 Chronicles 13, both tell the same story. David having the ark transported. And you read about David playing music before the Lord with all his might. And the people saying, David saying, if it is of the Lord, let's do this. But it mattered how one transported the ark. You didn't just have to have a good heart and be sincere. You had to do it the right way. Under the law of Moses, I mentioned earlier, you remember Aaron? Well, all the priests, they had a prescribed attire. They could not come before God if they weren't dressed in the attire that God had prescribed. The high priest, his garment was more elaborate. In Numbers, the 15th chapter, God told the Israelites that in the corner of their garment, they were to put a tassel. And in that tassel, there was to be a blue thread that would remind them of the law. Did God care about the appearance of that garment and the tassel and the blue thread? Well, of course he did. He said he did. Now, here's the great truth in all of this. Look at Matthew, the 15th chapter. The heart is going to determine how we dress, because that's where both good and evil originate. Verse 18, but those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man. But to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man. It comes out of the heart. Tonight, what I'm encouraging, pleading for, is that you make judgments from a heart that's committed to reverence, that's committed to purity, that's committed to concern for the influence you would have on others, with being a shining light. If you have that kind of heart, it's going to reflect itself in your dress. By contrast, if you don't, if you've got a different kind of heart, it's also going to show. Well, somebody else says, well, who gave you the right to make the rules? And that's a good question with a very simple answer. No one. James 4 and verse 12 says there is one lawgiver, and that's not me. I'm not the one lawgiver. I spoke last night about the warning in Colossians 2, about those that would try to subject others to man-made regulations. I don't believe in that. And I understand there is no specific dress code given in the Bible. But there are a lot of specifics about holiness and purity and concern for one's impact on others. All the principles we've talked about tonight, a lot is said about those. And what I want you to understand it. It may not be my place to draw the line, but there is a line. You know, I don't know how many of you have wondered sometime this week that I think he's going to fall at some point. You know, he gets so close to the edge. I know where the edge is, and it's a good solid edge. But just imagine with me for a moment that this were a cliff. And to fall off the cliff would mean certain death. But it wasn't a hard edge. That it was somewhat soft and a little bit crumbly. But you wanted to see, you know, kind of over the hill, how close would you get? Say, somewhere between here and there, there's a line at which it's going to give way on you. What are you going to do? You going to keep walking and say, well, I'm back here. You know, I'm going to take it. I'm going to be safe. I want you to understand there is a line to be drawn. And I want you to use a pure heart to draw that line. Not a heart that says, well, I want to make sure nobody ever makes fun of me. You know, I want to make sure I don't ever stand out. You know, I want to be comfortable. I want to fit in. I don't care what others think. I don't care about the influence I have. That's not a pure heart. One last objection I've heard, particularly talking about the sensual dress, things too low, too short, too tight, and such. Well, I just can't help it if somebody's got a dirty mind. You know, well, you can't. I mean, that's true. And there are some people, 2 Peter 2 describes it this way, their eyes are full of adultery. There are people whose minds are so vulgar, so filled with lust, that how they look upon a man or a woman has nothing to do with how that person is dressed. I understand that. But I want you to go back to what I said about Paul. Paul didn't take the approach that, well, you know, some people are going to think I'm dishonest no matter what I do, so I might as well just stick the money in my pocket. Paul took precautions. He cared about his influence. And that's the first thing I want to charge you. Are you careful about your influence? And then there's a second matter. No, there are some whose eyes are full of adultery. There are those who are lustful people. But Matthew 18 ought to be a sobering thought to us. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to that man by whom the offense comes. My margin gives in verse 7 enticements to sin. You don't want to be the cause of someone sinning in anything. Be sure your dress is not the contributing factor. If you've done all you can do, as in, go back to Paul, if after all he had done, somebody accused him of misappropriation of funds, there's not a lot he could do about that. But we can dress in ways that we in good conscience can say, they didn't lust because of the way I was dressed. Nobody looked down upon this church for loose living because of the way I was dressed. Clothes make a statement. They say something about us. And we need to think about that. Let's think. Do they say the right things about us? Do they say the things? And I believe that the vast majority here want to do the kinds of things we're talking about. Be holy. Be a good example. Avoid being a stumbling block to others. They want to be a force for good in this community. But sometimes we just forget to make application to the way we dress. I want to close the lesson by looking at 1 Peter, the first chapter. That call to holiness. And I want you to notice as he goes on how it ties in with that very thing we talked about Sunday morning. The lessons I've presented this week and the one I hope to present tomorrow evening, they're not strictly speaking a series. But then they're not totally random either. To be the holy people God desires, to make the kind of choices that I'm talking about making, that I believe God is calling on us to make, they're not easy. But they are made easier when we realize what Jesus did for us. That's why we started off with the cross. That's why we're going to end up tomorrow night with the courage to stand. It takes courage to be a Christian. I don't care whether you're a new Christian at 13 or 14 years old or you're a Christian at 80. It takes courage. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow night. But for now, look at verse 16. Be holy, for I am holy. And if you call on the Father, who without partiality judges according to each one's work, conduct yourselves throughout the time of your stay here in fear, knowing that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. He indeed was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you who through him believe in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. The precious Lamb of God died for you and me. We think of gold and silver as precious metals. He calls these corruptible things. He said, God gave something far better for you. If he gave that for me, then surely I can live for him in every way, including the way I dress. Live for Jesus in every way, morally, spiritually, every way. Live for Jesus. And as we sing the song that's been selected for your encouragement, if you've not yet come to Christ, not yet been baptized into Christ, had your sins washed away, Why wait another moment? If you're a child of God and you've turned away from the Redeemer who saved you by His precious blood, why stay away another minute? We're here to help you. All you have to do is make your way to the front while we stand together and sing.